This episode of the Vermont Conversation is brought to you by the Children's Literacy Foundation, or CLIF. Based in Waterbury Center, CLIF is a nonprofit organization that provides new books, in-person author visits, and inspiring literacy programs to kids and families across Vermont and New Hampshire. CLIF partners with schools, libraries, shelters, community centers, childcare programs, correctional facilities, and many other sites with the goal of helping under-resourced children discover the joys of reading and writing. To learn more about CLIF, visit their website at CLIF, that's CLIFonline.org.
I think what we need to do is look at what are the incentives now for lying and then try to change those incentives and create new incentives and disincentives.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. America is drowning beneath a tsunami of lies. The 2024 presidential campaign may be distinguished by the sheer volume and audacity of lying. Donald Trump has made embracing the big lie, the false claim that he won the 2020 election, a condition of entry into the MAGA universe. Once you accept the big lie, similarly brazen but smaller lies flow easily. And so Trump falsely claims that immigrants are eating pets and that disaster relief money is being stolen by Democrats and given to migrants. Lying is a bipartisan phenomenon, but Republicans dwarf Democrats in the number of lies that they tell. In September, New York Times fact-checkers analyzed a single stump speech made by both presidential candidates. Former President Trump made 64 false or inaccurate statements in his speech, while Vice President Kamala Harris made 6 such statements. In October, CNN determined that Trump made 40 false claims in just 2 speeches. Bill Adair is in the business of tracking and correcting political lies. Adair founded the Pulitzer Prize-winning fact-checking organization PolitiFact in 2007 when he was Washington bureau chief of the Tampa Bay Times. Adair is now the Knight Professor of the Practice of Journalism and Public Policy at Duke University and the director of the Duke Reporters Lab. He has a new book, Beyond the Big Lie: The Epidemic of Political Lying, Why Republicans Do It More, and How It Could Burn Down Our Democracy. I spoke to Adair about how and why politicians lie and what can be done about it. Bill Adair, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I want to skip over just lying as a feature of our current politics, because it's almost a given now that this is a topic of conversation. And look at what for me is has my attention, which is the strategy of unleashing a fire hose of lies, the volume of lying that to me seems meant it's more than just deceiving you about a single topic, you know, who's going to end Social Security and Medicare and such, but it's meant to overwhelm the system, to force the fact-based order to collapse. So people just say everyone lies, and then they embrace whoever, well, I think in Trump's case, the strong man who offers an alternate reality as a solution. So say a little bit about the strategy of our current moment of the torrent of lies, the volume of lies that we are being assaulted with on a daily basis.
You bet. It is unprecedented that we have had this kind of a volume. And this is the flood the zone concept that you're referring to, that I think Steve Bannon articulated early in the Trump presidency. And for the very reason that you explained, the other practitioner of this is Vladimir Putin, who has mastered this, and whose mischief you can see, and mischief is probably too innocent a word, in various ways that are, you know, getting detected by journalists here in the United States. NBC News had a great story a couple of days ago about a Russian outfit that has been planting some misinformation that's then been picked up by Republicans in the US, but also just trying it in general ways to plant misinformation and see how the US media responds. And as you said, what it does is sow doubt about everything, and it makes everybody question the authenticity of what they hear and read and see, and it makes people distrust the media in particular, mistrust their leaders, and it creates a moment for the rise of someone to say, I can take control of all this. And it's very scary, and it's a time when I think legitimate media needs to step up and discover what's going on and then tell people what's true and what's not.
Well, so this is, yes, lying with a different purpose, lying with the purpose of making the system collapse. And I think invoking Vladimir Putin is useful because this is a guy who is not trying to knock down a few things. He's trying to knock down the whole edifice of, in his case, a nation, Ukraine, but, sort of the world created that he wants to be in control of. Well, let me back up and to the point of your book, The Big Lie, talk a little bit about your own lie and how that led to you wanting to write this book.
You bet. So when I set out to write Beyond the Big Lie, I reflected back to a moment when I was on C-SPAN in 2012. And I had been on C-SPAN a fair amount before then as the editor of PolitiFact, the fact-checking website. I was the founder, and I in 2012, of course, we were fact-checking the presidential campaign. This was in the summer, and at that point, it was clear the nominees were Obama and Mitt Romney. And so I was on C-SPAN talking about the campaign, and I got a call from Brian from Michigan on the Democratic line, and Brian wanted to know which side lied more. He had read in The Nation that Democrats. That Republicans lied more. And I lied. I said that PolitiFact did not keep score, that would be like an ump asking an umpire which side was out at home more, the Red Sox or the Yankees. And I was lying because I was trying to appear impartial, and I didn't want to reveal that in fact PolitiFact did kept score at that time by politician. And so it was very easy. You could just add up the Republican politicians and the Democratic politicians, and you could see very clearly that Republicans lied more. And more broadly, I knew that Brian was right because having been PolitiFact editor and the founder, but even before that, as a reporter covering Congress in Washington and covering the White House, I knew that that pattern had been true for years. And so one of the reasons I wrote the book was to come clean about this and sort of atone for my lie and try to get people talking about this disparity, because it really is a significant problem in our country that there is such a disparity between the Republicans and the Democrats. It's something that reporters don't like to talk about. It's something that fact checkers don't like to talk about because they want to appear impartial, and they are usually pretty good at being impartial. I know there are allegations to the contrary, but I do think journalists for outlets in the mainstream media do a good job at being fair and even-handed in their coverage. But they don't like to draw these conclusions because they're afraid of blowback from the Republicans. So that's That's why I wrote this book, or one of the big reasons I wrote this book, so that I could explore this pattern of why Republicans lie more.
So first give us a scale of how much more do Republicans lie, and then get to your take on why Republicans lie more.
You bet. So the scale depends on sort of what is your universe of fact checks and things. So it's a little bit hard to put a number on. We did it without Donald Trump, because to include Donald Trump in the fact checks would really way overshadow, I think, the overall pattern. So we removed Donald Trump, which in a way sort of obscures the pattern. I think at one
Are you saying that PolitiFact removed Donald Trump
no,
from this
no, no,
headcount?
no, no. What I'm saying is that for my analysis here at Duke, we removed Donald Trump, and the reason for that was to the reason for that was to have a w was not to have him overshadow the not to have him overshadow the results, because otherwise, you're going to have so many. He's just he blots out the sun practically.
You know,
So,
I get the spirit of what you're saying. You're trying to weigh quantity, and you can't get an accurate quantity. But we all know that, the lie begins at the top. And he essentially, in terms of the airtime allotted to him, the senator from South Dakota gets 1/100th of the air media exposure than a Donald Trump lie does.
And so let me just answer your question. So you asked about percentage, or the overall difference. So in my book, what I say is that when we did this analysis, we found that for PolitiFact, we lumped things into a mostly false, and pants on fire ratings. And for Democrats, those ratings accounted for 31% of all the claims, and for Republicans, it was significantly higher, about 56% of the claims. So it's a pretty stark difference, that Republicans lie more. I mean, it's dramatically higher. And I should note, what the reason those aren't even radically higher is that PolitiFact, unlike other fact checkers, rates statements true. So when PolitiFact checks a claim and that people are curious about, or that PolitiFact writers are curious about, and finds that it's true or mostly true, they will rate it true or mostly true. Other fact checkers will often avoid those and not give them ratings, and they'll only rate things, do fact checks, if the statement is essentially false or nearly false. So that's why the PolitiFact numbers actually are more generous in that regard. So anyway, my point is the disparity is significant, and it's been consistent over time. If you go back to 2010, so pre-Trump, conservative critics of PolitiFact found, or I guess this is 2013, they examined things and found that 76 of 98 statements were rated false or pants on fire. 76 of 98 statements that were rated false or pants on fire were from Republicans. And so that gives you a sense, like, when PolitiFact gave a false or pants on fire in that time frame, the vast majority were from Republicans.
Why, yeah, so why do you think this is?
So I asked Republican politicians, I asked political operatives, and got some pretty consistent answers. So let's start with culture, the culture of the Republican Party. Many people mentioned that the culture of the Republican Party has been very tolerant of lying for some time. And they put as a turning point when Newt Gingrich became the head of the Speaker of the House, and which was in the early 1990s, and that Newt really cemented for the Republicans a culture that anything goes. Your listeners may recall back in that early 90s period, Newt himself began what was sort of a visual lie, the practice of Republicans speaking to the House on C-SPAN, but they were really speaking to an empty chamber. So that was sort of a lie. And it came to be known as Cam Scam. And that was how the Republicans w that were part of Newt's revolution built up their voice, so to speak. So that was a turning point. But you can go back farther and say it really started with Roger Ailes and Lee Atwater and sort of earlier in the Republican Party. But so culture is one reason why.
Well, let's just identify. So Ailes began as a, I think, a speechwriter or an advisor to Nixon, and then went on to head Fox News.
Exactly. And of course, but actually, and before that was a TV producer, produced the Mike Douglas show. And so Ailes had this, had a great sense of TV and what people want in as they consume media. So, Ailes was a very smart person who understood people. So culture is one reason why. Another reason why has to do with and I guess part of that culture thing, Denver Riggleman, a Republican congressman from Virginia, said something that I think fit into this culture idea. He said that Republicans view their work as part of an epic crusade, and in that epic crusade, anything goes. That it's perfectly fine to lie because their mission is so important. And I thought that was very telling, and I think that also fits into this idea of a culture of anything goes. So then, another very important thing, of course, the media. You have conservative media that has always seen itself as an underdog. That goes back into the 40s. And so conservative media not only has looked the other way when Republican politicians lie, but conservative media has echoed the lies, brought in commentators that have repeated the lies. And conservative media, interestingly, has found there's money in those lies. That Fox found if it did not repeat the lies of about the 2020 election, that it lost viewers. And as you'll recall from the Dominion lawsuit, some of the things that were revealed in text messages and emails were that the Fox leadership was concerned it was losing viewership because it was not keeping up with the lies that the One America Network and Newsmax were. And so Fox's viewership was starting to decline.
And of course, the Dominion lawsuit, for the first time, put a price tag on lying. In that case, $800 million was the penalty that Fox has had to pay in that one lawsuit. There are other lawsuits from that, and that was interesting because there doesn't seem to be a pen until that moment. There didn't seem to be a penalty for lying, only rewards. You could get elected to be president. You could get any number of other things. Is it your sense that the penalties for lying have changed? I mean, it used to be disqualifying if you were caught in a lie as a politician. Now it seems almost the opposite. It qualifies you to be a MAGA Republican to embrace the big lie that Donald Trump won the 2020 election that he lost.
Yeah, that's very true. I do think if you go back even to when I started PolitiFact in 2007, that there was a time back then when Republican politicians felt shame if they were caught in a lie, and that they would apologize sometimes, they would correct themselves. Things seemed to change about the time of Sarah Palin, when she would say things as McCain's running mate that were just not true. And I remember people coming to me when I was a PolitiFact editor and saying, gosh, does lying no longer have a consequence? And I began to wonder at that point. And it seems like that was a little bit of a milestone in at least in that road to where we are today. But I think you're right. I think the consequences are minimal, if any, now for Republican politicians, because the echo chamber repeats the lies so easily, and Republican politicians are not held accountable. And you know, if we think about the way that people consume media, so many Republican voters live in gerrymandered districts. They get their media from outlets that don't hold the Republican politicians accountable, that are not even nonpartisan outlets that are, you know, very partisan in their offerings. And so you have so you just have this divide that creates a lack of repercussions for the liars.
There is also a strategic approach to combating fact-checking now, to the point where we are in an election in 2024, where J.D. Vance, the vice presidential candidate, can say out loud while we're listening in a debate, we agreed there would be no fact-checking, and that this was clearly important to him. It was important to his strategy that no one correct the lies, and that attacking the media was a way of further eroding those who might hold him to account. It seems to me that Donald Trump, Vance, and whoever understand the media in a way better than the media itself has. That if you could, that for example, Trump could count on false balance, that if he lied 10 times, the way it would be reported was, you know, he could push this into the center of the news cycle and it would just never be countered because they'd always be on the one hand. On the other hand, talk about both siderism, false balance, whatever you want to call it. And what that has done to the ability to hold people to account.
Sure. So the political journalists in the United States operate on a sense of evenness. Both they, the ones who, that are covering campaigns, practice evenness. They try to be even-handed in how they cover things. They try to show they're politically neutral. But they do that because they do that under the assumption that historically things have been even. The two parties would be roughly even in their behavior, that they would be roughly even in their tactics. Both parties would do about the same kinds of things, would play by roughly the same kinds of rules, would even lie by roughly the same kinds of rates. You know, there was just this sense of evenness. And that concept sort of instilled everything in how political journalists operate. Well, along comes Donald Trump, who takes a party that was already moving way away from evenness in being not in lying among other things. And Donald Trump pushes it way to the extreme. There's never been anyone in American history who has lied in the volume that Donald Trump does. So, and then other Republican politicians enable him and then echo him and just repeat his lines and stand up for him, or at least, you know, fail to criticize him, because those that do, you know, are quickly run out of the party. So the news media is left with this predicament of, well, historically, to be fair, they showed evenness. Well, they can't with this situation, because the two parties that they're covering are no longer even in their behavior. And journalists have been way too slow to recognize that and way too slow to respond to it. And so, and that's a you know, significant point in my book, is that fact checkers are trying to do this important form of journalism, reveal what's true and what's not. But, and they actually have the receipts, as we like to say, about who's lying more. But they don't want to answer that question that I was asked by Brian from Michigan. And in fact, a lot of them are uncomfortable with my book, that I'm going on radio shows and podcasts talking about it, because it makes their job harder. And I understand that. Originally, when I set out to write the book, I thought, well, fact checkers need to be saying the things that I'm saying, and they need to reveal that Republicans lie more in a more prominent way. But by the end, after I talked to a few of them, I realized they can't, because they can't become crusaders. They really, like the umpire, still need to call the balls and strikes. So someone else needs to tally up the fact checks and tell people what's happening in the patterns of lying, and let the fact checkers keep calling the balls and strikes. However, those stories need to be written in a more prominent way by other journalists. And that hasn't been happening either. And I think people in the media need to figure out how that can be done in such a way that gets the message out to people about this disparity. Because, as I say in the book, this disparity has serious consequences. It not only makes it impossible for us to have a serious conversation about climate, to have a serious conversation about immigration, but it threatens our democracy, because we can very easily envision not just a rerun of 2020 come the results of the November election, but we can see that this time it could turn into a real crisis for our country, all because of lies.
Talk about your Lying Hall of Fame. Who's in it?
So this was a really interesting chapter to write. I set out to write a brief modern history of political lying. But I said, I don't want it to read like one of those history chapters, because if you're like me, when you get to those chapters, you often kind of skim through them because you want to get to the point of the book. And so my goal was to write a chapter about the history of lying that didn't read like a long history book. So I talked to colleagues here at Duke, historians, political scientists, and asked them for suggestions about people and entities that might be included if you were to build, so to speak, a hall of fame to political lying. Who or what would you include? And so then I selected a mix of people and entities that I thought reflected important milestones and people along the way that gave sort of a diverse look at political lie. So who's in there? Lyndon Johnson for his lies about the Vietnam War. Richard Nixon for his lies about Watergate. Bill Clinton for his lies about Monica Lewinsky. Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch for creating the Fox News Channel. And then entities. So this was interesting because I realized that
Did George W. Bush and lying about weapons of mass destruction make it?
So we had some interesting discussions about that. I ended up not putting George W. Bush in here because I talked to enough people and I covered the Bush White House that there is enough doubt about whether Bush knew that he was saying false things about weapons of mass destruction that I didn't feel he quite warranted being in the Lying Hall of Fame. Now I realize people very much can disagree with me on that one. I did put entities in the Hall of Fame that I think represent important factors in political lying. Facebook is in there because of the role that it's played in lying, particularly in other countries like Myanmar and India. I included Big Tobacco for its lies about the dangers of smoking, ExxonMobil for its lies about climate. And then my favorite in the Hall of Fame, and it would be great if we ever built it, is the couch from Fox and Friends. You could see coming into the Hall of Fame, and there's the couch. Because the couch on Fox and Friends is such an important thing. If you've ever watched that show, the people on that on the show, the hosts, Ainsley and Steve, sit on that couch and just launch lie after lie, and support the lies of the day. And it's a marvelous launching pad for lies, and I thought it deserved inclusion in the Hall of Fame.
I love the lying couch. That's yeah, there is a breezy, chatty, friendly face of lying there. So how do we stop the lying? How do we bring back a penalty for lying that seems to have fallen by the wayside?
Sure. I'm an optimist. Although I do think lying is so serious, I don't think we can't get back from it. I think what we need to do is look at what are the incentives now for lying, and then try to change those incentives and create new incentives and disincentives. So, as I stepped back and talked to politicians about why they lie, I realized politicians lie because they think they're going to gain from it. It's a calculation. So, how can we create disincentives? Well, one way is to look at what politicians need. They need advertising. They need advertising to reach their constituents. How do they do that best? Through targeted advertising from internet ad networks, from social media. And this idea originally came from one of my students. What if a group like a company like Facebook, and this could be expanded to ad networks, were to charge differential rates to politicians that had the best and worst records on from fact checkers? So if you had a good record from the Washington Post, the New York Times, PolitiFact, even from conservative fact checkers, put those into an aggregate. If you had a good record, you would be charged lower rates. If you had a worse record, you would be charged considerably higher rates. Now, this would hit them where they live. Politicians need advertising. At this point in the political cycle, they are relying so much on advertising that if we could get the tech companies, social media platforms to do this, we could really, I think, make politicians think twice about lying. So that's one idea. Another one that is basically takes a Republican approach would be to have a ple have politicians sign a pledge that they wouldn't lie. You know, how could a politician resist that? We're not saying, you know, we're not putting any strings attached to that. Just sign a pledge, I won't lie in office or campaigns. And then this would be like the Grover Norquist. He's a kind of a power broker in Washington who runs Americans for Tax Reform. He does this for Republicans who want to show they won't raise taxes. So they sign a pledge that they will never raise taxes. You could do this for lying. Have a prominent figure like Grover who would get people to sign it. And then it would just, there would be no enforcement of it other than politicians would criticize each other if they believe the other politician violated it. The news media could explore if they felt a politician violated it. It would be a great way to, I think, give yet another disincentive for lying.
Finally, as you look at the current political moment we're in, what do you think is the biggest or potentially most dangerous lie that is in circulation in this in the presidential race right now?
So I would say right now, the biggest lie is the lie in Springfield, Ohio about immigrants eating dogs and cats. I think it embodies the many lies that Republicans have been telling about immigration, portraying immigrants as law-breaking, uncivil, and you know, as part of this theme that so many problems in the United States, crime, problems in schools, et cetera, are a result of immigration. So I think that is the biggest lie. But the lie I worry about, the lies still to be told, are the lies about the upcoming election, because I fear that we're going to hear the same kinds of lies this time that we heard in 2020. And those are the ones with real consequences.
Well, Bill Adair, I want to thank you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
David, thank you so much for having me.
Bill Adair is the Knight Professor of the Practice of Journalism and Public Policy at Duke University. His newest book is Beyond the Big Lie: The Epidemic of Political Lying, Why Republicans Do It More, and How It Could Burn Down Our Democracy. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks so much for listening.